Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Evan Rachel Wood from 13 and across the universe to Westworld. Hey guys, Josh Horowitz here with another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. The very talented, the multi-talented, you know, what skill does Evan Rachel Wood not have? She can clearly sing, she can clearly act, and she is a charming human being that I always enjoy chatting with. This is a catch-up with the great Evan Rachel Wood on the occasion of Westworld's Season 4 debut. It has just debuted on HBO. I've caught the first four episodes, really dug them, and I know you'll enjoy this conversation with Evan about Westworld, but about her entire career, as we do around here. Fun fact, Evan was, for the devoted Happy, Sad, Confused listeners out there, you may or may not recall, back in the particularly crazy days, it's hard to say, oh, those were the crazy days, because look around us, guys, we're still in it. Things are crazy. But okay, the uniquely crazy days of the first days of the pandemic, Evan Rachel Wood was the first guest on the kind of retooled Happy, Sad, Confused when we started doing it virtually. And when I started asking folks about comfort movies, she was kind enough to come on about season three of Westworld, but really about her comfort movie, Clue. So that was, and I listened to that the other day, as I mentioned to Evan, and it's just bizarre to listen to what we sounded like back then. We were all just in a state of shock. But then again, guys, aren't we still in a state of shock? If it's not COVID, it's the Supreme Court of the United States just setting us back 50 plus years. I don't, you know, you guys know where I stand on politics and the like, and I'm not going to go on and on, but I will say I know it's been a really tough week for anybody and everybody out there. And it will be a tough road, surely. There's no easy answers to where we're at right now. But I guess we all just got to maintain hope and keep doing our part. You know, I made a donation. I'll put it in the link in the show notes for some places where you can donate to help, you know, keep opportunities available for women who, you know, need options, because the options are getting more limited in this increasingly totalitarian state. Gee, what a fun intro. I know, guys. But kind of appropriate given the subject matter of Westworld, and kind of appropriate given that Evan is a noted feminist who is always up for speaking her mind, and I really admire her for that. We get into not the stuff I'm talking about towards the end of this conversation, because it hadn't broken when we had this chat, but we do talk a little bit about her activism in recent years. You know, if you don't know it, she was, you know, allegedly, you know, in a pretty horrible relationship with Marilyn Manson, and she has, you know, used her bully pulpit, her public profile, to spread the word of, you know, trying to expand rights for domestic violence victims, increase the statute of limitations on these kind of crimes. And there was a two-part doc out early this year from HBO called Phoenix Rising, and she continues to, you know, she's testified on Capitol Hill and done a whole lot of great work. So that's the connection on the political side of things. But first and foremost, this conversation today is a bit of escapism, as Happy, Sad, Confused always is. It's a nice, long, juicy chat about Evan's fantastic career, and she's been acting since she was a kid. You know, most of us probably first took note of her in the great Catherine Hardwicke movie 13, opposite Nikki Reed. But she has consistently worked with some of the greats out there, As I referenced, she is an extraordinary singer, has a musical career on the side, but that's also broken out onto the big screen. In recent years, she was in Frozen 2, but probably most notably Across the Universe, that crazy Julie Taymor Beatles-infused musical from a bunch of years back. So we talk about it all in this conversation, including the new season of Westworld. She's always a delight. This was a conversation we did virtually, but in conjunction with 92NY. A lot of fun working with them as always. Hopefully we've got some more. You know, we're always working on more virtual events, but actually, we're really trying to prioritize more in-person events in New York City. So we will try to do that again very soon, and I will be letting you guys know first here, and really first, I will say, on the Patreon page. What a segue, right? Patreon.com/happysadconfused is where we put up all the video versions of the podcast, of all the Game Night episodes, of all the episodes of A Second Look. And yes, it's where we let folks know the first news on upcoming guests, on upcoming events in New York City and elsewhere. That's the place to be. So patreon.com/happysadconfused. Give it a try if you are so inclined. Trying to have some fun over there, and hopefully you guys are enjoying what we have to offer. Let's see. Other things mentioned besides Evan and the horrible state of the world. Let's think. A couple exciting interviews posted from my other jobs. MTV News, I did a couple really fun interviews recently. Caught up with Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen for Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's up on MTV News' YouTube page. What a great treat that was. I mean, if you had told me I'd be talking to those two guys about a Star Wars project 5 years ago, I would have said you were crazy, but here we are. So that's great. Also got a chance to talk to Austin Butler. If you listened to the podcast last week, of course, you heard my conversation with Baz Luhrmann, the director of Elvis. The real story of Elvis, as you know if you've seen the film or if you've heard the buzz, is Austin Butler's remarkable performance, a true catapult to another level of stardom, I think, for Austin. That was a great catch-up with him. That's also for MTV News. Highly recommend checking that out, and glad to see that Elvis is doing well. Something that's not a superhero movie, doing well. Top Gun certainly, lit the fire in the box office, I guess, recently, but it's exciting to see so many movies, people going out to the movies. I was pretty pessimistic about the state of movie theaters a few months back, but the summer's been pretty, pretty exciting. We've got a very fun Comedy Central sketch coming very soon. I think the end of the week. I will keep you posted on that. We shot it the other day. A new young talent that has not been on the podcast before, but I have a lot of love and respect for her, and she killed it in the sketch. That's coming very soon. And what else? Well, just around the corner is San Diego Comic-Con. I'll be out there. I can say that, I think. I'll be out there for MTV News, out there for Comedy Central, doing what I hopefully do best, I guess, which is talk to celebrities about their projects and try to have some fun. So hopefully I'll see some of you guys out there. I always have a blast in San Diego, and I'm so excited to be back covering one of my favorite events, the insanity that is San Diego Comic-Con. I think that's all the plugs for today. Let's just say, speaking of plugs, if you want to plug and spread the good word of the podcast, please do. I know I say it, but let's take a moment. Let's take a breath and think about this. Pay it forward, guys. Don't be selfish. Spread the good word of Happy Sad Confused. Do me a solid. Maybe this is your first episode. Maybe it's your 100th episode. Go over to Apple iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us a kind review. It only helps spread the good word. We're 8 years and counting into Happy Sad Confused, and I am not giving up. I am just going forward until they pull this microphone away from me. That's my duty to you, dear listener. All right, let's get to the main event. Here is my conversation and catch up with the extraordinarily talented Evan Rachel Wood. My guest today is the absurdly talented star of 13, Across the Universe, The Wrestler, and in recent years, HBO's mind-bending sci-fi saga Westworld, which is about to come out for its fourth season. She sings, she acts, she can quote the movie Clue at a moment's notice. It's my old buddy, Evan Rachel Wood.
What's hey, up, Evan. Josh?
It's so good to see you.
Good to see you.
So welcome back to the podcast. First of all, so you've been on the podcast, but you've been in
you were actually, I don't know if you remember this, you were the first guest on Happy, Sad, Confused when everything went to hell. You were kind enough to come on in those crazy times in March of 2020. And we did, we had like a 45 minute conversation about Clue, because what else were we doing with our time then?
Yes.
And it's so funny. I was listening back to that chat, and it's like a, piece of history now. It's like to hear like us like trying to sort out what was happening. It's crazy now to think of.
I thought about that as I was doing all of the like Zoom interviews in 2020. Yeah. During that time, like going on talk shows over Zoom, all these unprecedented things. I was like, this is history. Like not everybody's going to do this or has done this. This is very specific. Anything that happened in the past couple of years, I feel like will be referenced and studied for quite some
1,000%. I feel like people are going to look back at all the tape we did in 2020 and be like, oh, their brains are melting that year. Like they don't know how to process what's happening.
No, well, I'm really excited to see now that everything is opening back up. I was talking about this last night, to see the resurgence and what the culture is going to be like now that everybody's kind of back out in the wild, what the art's going to be, what the music's going to be, because our brains have been melted and bended in every different direction. And so I guess we're going to see the effects of that.
No, it is. It's true. It's a silver lining, a small silver lining. And it's been a horrible couple of years for all of us, but like great art does emerge from wars, from crises, from tragedies. And this has certainly lived up to all of that. The premiere was last night here in New York City. I saw you for a brief second. We were just chit-chatting and we were talking about how it was cool to be out and about, as you say. Talk to me, like, is it still a little bit surreal to be out with your cast members, out with folks you know and recognize in that kind of setting?
It is, especially because the last thing that I did before everything shut down was the Westworld premiere for season 3. That was the last thing right before the shutdown. And then, so this is, I believe, my first premiere. Like in person since then.
Do you have an all-time favorite premiere memory of not even just Westworld in your life? And like, what's the one that jumps out as like, oh, that was a bizarre, fun, weird night. And if nothing jogs, it's okay. We'll move on.
You are asking me to go through a Rolodex of memories.
It's okay.
And so like that would take me a second because a lot of those memories are a little hazy.
Okay. That means they were good premieres.
Every time I go,
I don't
really smoke cigarettes anymore. But I will say that like a Westworld premiere for me is not complete until I have a cigarette with Ed Harris.
It's so funny you say that. I saw when I walked into the party, I saw Ed Harris smoking outside. I'm like, all right, we're in business. Yeah. I don't know what that means. It's just
don't smoke. I feel like you're like, but I'm gonna smoke with Ed Harris. I'm like, come on, Jesus. It's not a monster.
Yeah, so. No, I get it. Talk to me a little bit about, okay, so let's go back because your association with Westworld. Okay, so the 4th season is about to premiere. I've seen the first 4 episodes, by the way, and they're excellent, amazing as always.
I love this season a lot,
It's great. So we'll get into that, but let's go into the history first because you've been, it's been a long road with this show. It takes a lot of work to put this series together. Has anybody seen the episodes? It's a very ambitious undertaking. You were first cast in what, like 2014?
14, yeah.
So where were you at then when Westworld came around? Were you looking for a series? Were you looking for anything like sci-fi? I mean, how did it happen and where were you at?
It was honestly a godsend. I was in a weird place in my career, actually. And I was sort of, I've had a few moments in my trajectory where I've gone, do I want to keep going? Do I want to stop? What am I doing? I need to reevaluate. And I was at kind of one of those points right before Westworld came around. I was like, what am I doing? And how am I doing it?
Right.
And I was like a new, like single mom, kind of like, what am I going to do? And it really just came to me. Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan, I don't know why they're so good at like, I'm tooting my own horn here a little bit, but like, but their ability to cast a show is pretty outstanding, especially because at the time when they said, we really want you to do this role, I was kind of like, why me?
Right.
I don't know. Like it was like a period piece. It was like this kind of
like the Cypher show. And I was just kind of like, I wonder why they thought of me. I don't know. Like I welcomed it, but I was kind of like, huh. And then, you know, it wasn't until about halfway through the season, I was like, how did you guys know that this was my role? Like I haven't, yeah. It's one of like the crown jewels of my career. I think we've talked about this. Like, you know, when people ask me like, what are some things that you're most proud of? Like Westworld is definitely top three. And I think always will be. It was just like, especially that first season, just such a pure experience making it, you know, when like there's these projects you work on where everything just falls into place and comes together. And this was just one of those things where you could feel it and you know, you were working on something amazing. And so, yeah, it kind of reinvigorated my whole outlook on, you know, acting and my career and what I wanted to do. And it was inspiring. And it was like, okay, I'm ready for round two kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious. Like, so like, talk to me a little bit about that. Like, where was that about self-doubt? Was it about not enjoying the kind of roles that you were up for and feeling like the industry wasn't seeing what you were?
Yeah, it was a little bit about not enjoying the roles because it's hard when you're in that kind of early 20s right. age range. And you're like, I guess, you know, like a pretty girl and people don't really know what to do with you. Cause you're like, I want to play like character roles and I want to be doing yeah. like, and they're like, but you're pretty. And so we not sure what we do with you yet, you know? And you're like, all right, I guess I'll wait for, you know, right. the more interesting stuff to come, not just like the sex symbol or the ingenue or yep. whatever. So yeah, it was a little bit that, but also I think like when you've been acting your whole life, I mean, I've been acting since I was four, you know, I'm 35 now. I've already been doing this like over 30 years. You know, sometimes I get a little tired. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And so I was at that kind of crossroads. I'm like, did I choose this? Do I want right. this? Is this really what I want to do? You know? And so, yeah, it's good to check in with yourself and make sure, you know, that you're always kind of like making the choice to do it. You know,
I love the math on that. Cause how great is it going to be when we're talking, when you're like 85 and you can be able to say to me, Josh, I've been acting for 81 years.
It's true. Like, it's like, not it's kind of crazy. Like that. Most people like after 30 years are like, I'm done, I'm retiring. And I'm yeah. like, I'm just getting started. Oh God. Like,
it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool, I have to say. Okay. So talk to me like these scripts from the get-go, so ambitious, so heady. I mean, this is dense stuff. And I'm curious, like, did you get it from the start? Like, what were the big questions you had for the creators, the showrunners about Dolores, about the show? Was it all on paper or was it like, I don't understand like where this is headed, what this means or what?
A lot of it is on the page, absolutely, but so much of it is, you know, our metaphors and poetry and you know, mythology and references of other stories, fairy tales, cautionary tales, and so it really helps having Jonah and Lisa sit there and so beautifully, you know, describe what we're doing and why we're doing it. And I think it was the first season around the third or fourth episode, because I really didn't know very much going into the show. Like I knew it was HBO. I knew there were right. great people behind it. And so I felt good essentially accepting a job from a script I had never read. It was like off of a concept because wow. we weren't allowed to read the scripts until after we were cast in the show, essentially. And so it was kind of a leap for everybody, but I think we all knew sort of, but you know, it was going to be something extraordinary, but I had no idea that it was going to be as profound yeah. and that it was going to be such a commentary on technology and society and freedom and choices. And, you know, these existential questions that I feel like we're really just sort of starting to ask ourselves, like even like, you know, the tagline of the show, have you ever questioned the nature of your reality? It's like, it's kind of an eerie tagline, but it really is like a good question. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. Have you ever questioned the nature of reality?
Not until this moment. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, and people ask me if the show has like changed my perspective on the world and on technology. I'm like, absolutely. I think it'd be impossible.
You can't live in that space for years. Yeah, of course.
No. With people that really, you know, have their finger on the pulse of the future and what's coming. And I think are genuinely trying to, you know, caution us about certain things or make us ask questions that we may not be asking. I mean, there's laws being broken right now that aren't even written because technology is moving so quickly, you know? And so it's good to stay on top of it. these interviews about the show are always very uplifting. They're like,
no, I guess
I have to joke around a lot because they're like, tell us about the show. I'm like, well, you know, like the human race is pretty much done.
Basically, it's the epilogue of the human race.
Live it up.
Basically, it's good to laugh, though. Okay, yeah. You get at one thing that I think the show has been brilliant at, which is that it is so iterative and it builds upon itself, and that goes to the casting, goes to the setting. I mean, I remember when we talked a couple of years ago about season three, you were talking about it as like, this kind of feels like a new beginning in a way, yeah. A bit of a reboot. Totally. Let's talk about season three before we get to season four a bit, because that was quite the season for Dolores. How was it? Were you presented with that entire storyline and end for Dolores at the outset of that season? Did you know it was the end for Dolores?
I did. Yeah. They told me, sort of almost, like at first it was kind of passed off as a joke. Like the first, before every season, we all usually have a call or a sit down with Joan and Lisa, and they sort of give us a blueprint of, you know, the need to know things about the season, sort of the vibe where we're going, but you know, all the details really get filled in as we're going. And so they were describing it to me, and they're like, you know, and then maybe this is going to happen, you know, and then like, I don't know. And then she dies, and then we bring her back. And I was like, you said that so flippantly, you know, like, it's like so nonchalantly, just like, and then maybe you're going to die and then you'll come back. Like, that seems like a pretty big plot twist.
Yeah. Can we like, dive into that for a second? Can we just
expand on that a little? Or are we gonna, okay. And so, yeah, it wasn't until we were nearing the finale that I got to sort of ask more questions and get the lowdown. And yeah, they were like, no, she really is dying. You will be back, but you will not be Dolores. You know, you're going to look and sound like you, but you're not going to be you. But that's all I was told. And so it wasn't until I was coming on to season four that I got to know who exactly I was.
Well, that's tantalizing. So that's fascinating because it must be, I don't know, was that a mixed, were you excited by that? Were you thrilled by that? Or was it like, wait, I'm starting from scratch. Like I've been building this character over many years and yeah, it's cool. I'm coming back. But wait, right. What about my buddy Dolores?
I mean, it's always mixed feelings every season because I already feel like the character has changed every season already. You know, there was like, you know, I call her OG Dolores. OG Dolores with the Southern accent who just saw the beauty and everything. And she was just pure and open. And then season two, it's like all the walls are up and she's just like on a mission, like Terminator. Season three, you know, and that's when she turned into Wyatt. So I felt like I was playing another character season two. And then season three, she's a more modern woman and there's the duality with Hale and you get into her interior world a little bit more, but she's still very guarded. So I was kind of excited to come back much more human. I think when people come on the show, they're like, turn me into a host. And I was kind of the opposite of like, oh, I'm excited to be more vulnerable and be a little nerdier. And, you know, also it was nice to have a break from all the like physically exhausting stuff. I was like, you guys go do it.
You're so good at it though.
Season. I'm not in the dirt. I'm not doing it. They had mercy on me. I'm sure because next season they'll be back at it.
So let's tease the audience a little bit because I have a sense of it. I certainly haven't seen the entire season, but yes, you reemerge as Christina. You've got a very cool roommate in Ariana DeBose. Again, let's talk about the expanding. I mean, one season you had Tessa Thompson, you had Aaron Paul, now Oscar winner Ariana DeBose. These guys are doing it right.
Harking back to how good they are at casting, like they cast like Tessa and Ariana, like, you know, this is like before Ariana's Oscar. This is like, you know, like right before like Tessa just like blew up, you know? So like they can see people really well. Like
up and comer Anthony Hopkins right before he hit. I mean, they got
Anthony
right.
Hopkins on the mat, man. Like, but you know, some people don't, they only go for like what's already popular.
Yes.
And it's rare that you find people that not only are good at it, but trust themselves enough. And like, no, this is, investing in this. Yeah.
So you're roommates with Ariana's character. There's a big sense of Christina seems to be haunted by some things, has some dreams, there's a real sense of deja vu in her life. She's dating. This is not turning into a rom-com show. Don't worry, guys, but there are some dates in it. I guess what can we say about Christina? How would you describe her?
Well, I think people will sort of notice right away that this is a completely new person, but she is in a bit of a routine or a loop that may feel a little familiar. But I think she's kind of like the wallflower. She's a little like unassuming, not totally confident in herself. Really sweet girl, very nerdy. Has Dolores qualities of, I really long for romance and poetry and excitement, and I long for something more than what this world has to offer me. And I feel like there's something wrong with the world, but everyone's making me feel like I'm the one that's wrong. And so I think that's where her and Dolores have a lot in common, in that she just knows something's off.
Yeah.
And she can't quite put her finger on it, you know, and that's where she starts, is sort of just getting this feeling and then having to uncover the mystery of who she is and what the world she's found herself in could be.
We can say, I think it's in the trailer that Mr. Marsden is going to pop back in there, right? Yes. That's pretty cool.
Is he Teddy? Is he good? Is he bad? Because, you know, people can look like people and not be people. I mean, that's why the show always sort of keeps you on your toes, because you're like, oh, Teddy's back. And you're like, is he?
Right.
Well, close. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So since we have the luxury of time, we've never really done the career conversation thing. We're not going to hit everything, but I do want to go back a little bit with you.
Okay.
Because I know you were born into this to a degree. Your parents loved and lived a life in acting and theater and loved film. Yeah. Do you like remember a time where like acting and film wasn't just like part of the discussion? No.
No, I honestly can't. It's very hard for me to even remember a time before I was on a set. Because I started working on films when I was four. So you don't have a lot of memories before that, like just kind of little flashes of things. But, you know, for the most part, it's just always been a part of my life. And so it's just so second nature to me now. I mean, the second I get on a set, it's just so ingrained into my DNA. You just go like straight into everybody always calls me a soldier on set, because it's just... know exactly what I'm doing. I don't know how to do a lot of things, but I know how to do that. Really,
I don't know.
Like eating, breathing.
when did you start to do TV and film auditions? Like when did you really make a concerted effort to like, or your parents kind of help you in that area?
I think it was after that first TV movie, and my brother Ira is also an actor, and he was doing films as a child as well, and like sometimes I would like piggyback off of what he was doing and like get thrown into like one of his projects in like a flashback or something. And then, you know, this is when I was living in North Carolina too. And there was a lot more filming happening in Wilmington.
Yeah.
So there were studios.
How did
there.
You not end up on Dawson's Creek? Wasn't that
I don't
like,
no, I was a little young, like and my tips weren't frosted. And so right. I can't, it was the right type. I would drive up from Raleigh with my mom a lot to audition in Wilmington. A lot of sitting in hallways with that like old fax paper, that like tissue paper.
Yes.
The ink's all smeared. You're trying to read your lines. Like that was back in the day. Now everybody's like self-taping on iPhones and stuff. It's just a completely different world from like getting a fax.
Right. 1,000%. Did you have strong opinions, like even as a kid, about like high art versus low art? Like, would you have been just as happy to be like on like Mickey Mouse Club or a CW? No, you weren't. You were a highbrow.
I was such a little snob. I was such a little acting snob as a kid. Well, but again, like not in a, oh, we're better than you, but just, you know, again, yeah, my parents were actors and my parents have great taste and they're good actors. And they're like Jonah and Lisa, you know, in that like they spot good quality and like, and they'll see potential in somebody way before, you know, they're discovered or blow up, because they're not just like going after what's cool. Like they're genuinely, you know, seeing good art. And so, yeah, there was a real, not just appreciation for good art, but like integrity and why you're doing what you're doing. It was never based around celebrity or fame or, you know, just wanting people to like you. It was like, no, I really want to make something that's going to move people and change people. And, you know, art was sort of a form of activism in a way in our house. And so I always treated it with like dignity and respect. And, you know, it wasn't just like throwing on a costume and making faces. It was like really trying to connect people.
And do you remember the first gig that felt like you were getting at what your parents talked about, where it was like, this is not just work. This is like, this is kind of important, you know, with a capital Y, maybe this is kind of special.
I think the first time you move somebody to tears with a performance, and not just a performance, you're like, oh, I acted that scene really well. It's like, for me, if I do a scene really well, it's because I've managed to let my walls down and show a part of myself and be seen,
right?
You know, and show a part that you're like, I don't know if anybody's going to relate to this, but this is real for me. And then when somebody else connects to that and they're moved by it in the same way, I think that's when you realize. I was just having this conversation with somebody last night. They were like, what is that feeling when, you know, you connect with somebody through your art, or you make, you know, that connection, you relate in that way. I was like, it's called healing. Like, that's what that feeling is. It's when you're seen, you know, in a deeper way through art, or somebody connects with you through your art. And I swear to God, that feeling that you get is like something in you being healed. Wow. Because something was shown and then it was seen. You know, it's like, we all just want to be seen.
Yeah. So when did you start to feel, when do you remember
that? One of the first films that I watched that really made me want to be a serious actor was The Miracle Worker with Patty Duke and Anne Bancroft. And that was the first time I saw like a child act that well, you know, right. Like,
yeah.
And it just kind of blew me away. And so my dad, you know, runs a theater. My mom's an actress. So I just got up the courage to sort of be like, can we do The Miracle Worker at the theater? And can I play Helen Keller? And he was like, when you're eight, we'll do it. And so for like 2 years, I was like pretending to be blind, like walking around my house, like just trying to get this thing down. My mom played Annie Sullivan, and we ended up, and he kept his word. I turned eight and we did Miracle Work at the theater. And I remember the first night I really, like, it clicked for me, and I was doing the water pump scene.
Yeah,
and there's
a
moment where she understands for the first time, and like, something just happened this night, and I felt like the energy in the room shift, and I could hear people weeping in the audience. And I'm like a kid, and I'm like, suddenly you're like, oh wow. Like, I'm just this little thing that just like moved like a whole theater of people. And that's when I felt the kind of profound impact, when it's like, oh, I'm not like trying to act really well. I'm just letting go.
Yeah.
And you feel that wave and that energy. I think that was the moment.
Well, it also must be one of those things where like you're gifted with that moment of feeling, and then the rest of your career, you're kind of chasing that again. You know what that feels like.
It's true. That is true.
And you know what it doesn't feel like that.
The curse. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. That wasn't it.
That wasn't like Helen Keller back when I was eight. Yeah.
But it makes those moments even more just sweeter when you get in that flow state. And that's what Westworld, that's what I was saying about Westworld. That first season, you're like, oh,
yeah,
everything's fallen into place.
Let's do a little bit of This Is Your Life and show you a couple clips. There are a couple films in particular we in the audience, of course, love. I mean, it's seemingly a pivotal moment is your collaboration with Catherine Hardwicke and Nikki Reed on 13. And Catherine is such a unique spirit as a filmmaker, a unique life force in the world. Maybe let's show the clip first, and then we can talk on the other side about what this film, what this experience meant to you. Let's take a look at 13.
You want it so bad. Look what I got from the tattoo shop. Let's do it right now. Yeah. Sewing kit.
This is probably gonna hurt worse than your tongue.
I don't give a shit, just do it.
Everything okay, Evie?
Yeah, we just pulled the coke mask.
So yes, you were doing that while you were watching the clip, covering your face. Clearly there is still some sense memory there. Talk us through that scene. Yeah.
It's also like, I get why it was so hard for people to watch now that I'm a mom and an adult. And so I go back and look at my little 14-year-old self and I'm like, oh, no, don't do that. Put that down. That scene actually, that little dull needle did slip a bit. And so I am slightly getting pierced in that jaw. It kind of went like halfway in.
So yeah, you're not so much acting.
I had a scar on my belly button for a hot second. I still give Nikki like grief about it in a joking way.
So that experience from all indications of talking to Catherine and people that worked with Catherine Hardwick over the years, like her sets are unique. Like she has such a fluid, almost improvisational style, like wants, like craves authenticity, craves that feeling in the moment. Was that different than anything you'd ever experienced? Did it feel like a special experience, just the making of the movie?
Yeah, it's funny because it was so different. I remember the first couple of days thinking like, oh my God, what did I do? it was like her first film and you're like, is this gonna work? But again, I think because everybody threw themselves in headfirst, and especially like with Holly Hunter sort of, as the elder and the anchor on this thing, I mean, she's like as real as it gets and as talented as it gets. And so once you kind of surrendered to the experience, it was amazing because it did feel, she gave us so much freedom and like, she really respected the actors and the actors' experience. And we slept in the house. We me and Holly and Nikki would sleep there sometimes. Like we really wanted to feel like our home. We helped set the kitchen up. Like we put, when set dressing came in, we like put the stuff in the cabinets so that we knew, like it felt like our home. And so it was like a second scan where we knew where everything was. And then, it was just like a messy, crazy guerrilla filmmaking experience where like half the time we were shooting in places we didn't have permission to shoot. At one point, Steadicam was in a shopping cart. They like found a shopping cart on the side of the road and just threw the cameraman in there. So it was like that kind of filmmaking. Yeah. And you're just crossing your fingers going, this is either going to be great or it's a disaster. And I do remember the first time we saw the film, just sort of being a bit shell-shocked. Like, I can't believe... I mean, I can, but also I can't believe that like our shopping cart Steadicam set.
Right. I could see a scenario where, you walk away from that film being like, okay, that's going to be a disaster. That's not a usable movie. And
no, like really, it could have gone either way. Yeah. not that I didn't have faith in Catherine, but it's just like, you just never know. And with the subject matter, I actually turned down that film twice because I just didn't trust that somebody was going to do it right.
Right.
Until I met Catherine and we sat down and had a whole conversation about it. And she showed me her lookbook and I was like, oh, she actually really gets it. I have to do this movie. And it's really incredible to me how much it stood the test of time and how much people still bring it up.
Yeah.
And how it's still shocking.
Yeah.
So ECP, not that it's meant just to be shocking, but the fact that like, it was just so raw and so real that it's stood the test of time, I think. I mean, like, it's hard doing something like that when you're 14. And now that I'm an adult, like looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, there were probably some moments that I was not like totally comfortable, but you are, when you're doing a film like that, sort of the sacrificial lamb in a weird way, because you're showing people this cautionary tale of what not to do, but there's actual teenagers in it doing the things you're not supposed to do.
Right.
And so it's a little like a little double-edged sword, but again, it's like one of the things I'm most proud of. Still, I think it's funny. Like, what was one of your best performances? I'd be like, it's still when I was 14.
Well, the good news is you've got current work that we're proud of too. Sometimes.
And like Kajillionaire, like there's a lot of things that I'm very, very proud of, but I just love that is still like, I think I will forever be like one of my top three. And I was like, as a kid.
Did Catherine try to entice you to Twilight? Did you come in and talk Twilight when she was doing it?
It's funny. I remember her mentioning something while we were filming 13. She was like, I got to talk to you about this vampire thing that I'm doing. And I think I didn't really take it seriously. I was like, sure, you're going to do a vampire movie after this. And then, you know, yeah, sure enough, it's like the biggest thing
they're
in the
fine,
world.
They're fine. Everyone's fine. It's okay.
Yeah. But I'm really happy for it because that was also before there was sort of more of an incentive to hire female directors. You know,
oh, and it opened up a whole new audience. It was like suddenly the studios were like, oh, young women can open a movie.
Exactly.
Who knew?
Exactly. And it changed the game for like young actors too, because I definitely remember being that age and looking for projects. And I mean, there weren't a lot of options when you're a teenager. It's like, you want to be on the Disney Channel or you want to be on Nickelodeon? What are you doing? Right. But either way, you know, you got to smile and do a dance. Right. And I was like, it's not what I'm into. And so I feel like 13 sort of opened the door back up for like, oh, right. You know, teenagers are also like human beings with a very deep interior life that we should explore more and sort of pay our respects to. So
It's so cool. It occurs to me as I go to this next clip, you've worked with some iconoclastic female filmmakers in your career in particular. Yeah. And of course, Julie Taymor is that, a true visionary. And Across the Universe is a hell of a big swing. It doesn't get bigger than like, okay, we're going to
do a Beatles musical. A
Beatles musical, and just the audacious visual technique casting you, but casting Jim Sturgis, who I think it was his first film. Crazy. Yeah. Let's take this is a brief snippet of you singing just again one of those iconic songs. This is, I think, If I Fell. Let's take a look.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before, and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her.
What a
You've got a pretty good voice. Let's put it out there. That's the, because it's the other side of Evan Rachel Wood that we should mention is that you're just this extraordinary singer, clearly. And like, talk to me a little bit about, I don't know, the privilege and the pressure of the most iconic songs in the history of songs on that set.
I remember hearing through the grapevine that Julie Taymor was working on, at the time, an untitled Beatles musical that was in the works. And the second I heard that, it was just, there was no other option. I had to do it. I don't think I've ever wanted anything more. I was like, and I was such a huge Beatles fan, and I just knew this was mine. And so I've never been more nervous for an audition. I remember leaving the audition and my back was covered in sweat, just from the nerves of wanting it so bad and having to keep my cool. And I sang It Won't Be Long and If I Fell in the audition, and talked to Julie for a few minutes, and then left the audition going, okay, then it either went really great or really bad. I have no idea. And I was halfway down the street and somebody ran out of the building and chased me. And we're like, wait, can you come back? We want to like read you with some people. And I was like, yeah. I ran back, started reading with people. And then, and then I think I had to wait maybe like a month or two to hear an answer. And then I was filming Running with Scissors with Ryan Murphy. And my agents came to set. And I was like, that's weird. My agents are coming to set. And they told me that I was going to be Lucy. And I literally cried. I started crying. And it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. I turned 18 filming. I was out on my own for the first time in New York City, singing Beatles songs with some of the most kind and talented people, still all very close friends of mine. Just the privilege of getting to watch Julie work and getting to know her mind and how much she really loves people and art and what she does. And like, she can get kind of like a bad rap sometimes, but I really think it's because she's an uncompromising woman.
Yes.
I know a lot of directors, like male directors, that are way worse, and they're, but you know, they're like hailed as a genius because they're so difficult. And Julie's not difficult, but she knows what she wants.
Yeah.
She's not going to compromise. She's like, no, no, no. Like we strive for excellence, and she throws you way out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Like when she came to us and said, you know, I was watching musicals recently and I can just tell when people are lip syncing. So we're going to do it live. And we were already like a month into recording, thinking like, take our shoes off after this, we can relax, the recordings are done, we're gonna lip sync this. She was like, no, 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 I think we're gonna do it live. So as if it wasn't stressful enough, you know, now we gotta do it perfectly on the day.
Yeah.
That scene that we just watched was live on the set, and it wasn't even supposed to linger in that shot for that long, but Julie loved the take and the performance so much that she didn't cut out of it. So that's why it's such a long opening shot. But it was one of the best times of my life. Like, I don't even know where to begin with that experience.
Should I be surprised that you, obviously you were in Frozen 2 in recent years, which was a musical performance, but yeah. I mean, you who have so much talent and so much love for music, you haven't done like a full on live action musical since then. Have you been up for a bunch of these? Has it just not been the right time or the right fit, or what's happened?
So yeah, one I turned down. Because it didn't feel right. And another one, I won't say which one, because I don't want to be disrespectful to the actress that did do it. But I was really pregnant when I auditioned for one very high profile musical that they wanted me to do. And it was like the timing, it just didn't work out. And so, you know, I got sent a big bouquet of flowers that was like, next time we'll do it. But I think it's just because, you know, something's waiting. It will happen. If not on film, then definitely on Broadway. That's a
dream. You have to come. You have to stay here in New York and do Broadway.
I got to.
Please.
Yeah, I'm dying to.
Let's sneak in one more clip if we can. This is around the same period. And like you talk about uncompromising filmmakers, and you think of someone like Darren Aronofsky, certainly he's someone like that. But I have great admiration for his work, as I do Julie's. This is The Wrestler, which is maybe his most stripped down piece of work though. And it's such extraordinary performances between you and Mickey. And let's take a look at you and Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler.
Hey, Stephanie. Where are you going?
What do you want?
I just have to talk to you.
I can't really talk right now.
I really need to talk to you.
I have school.
You going to school?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Listen, I had a heart attack. And I just thought I needed to tell you.
You're such an asshole. What do you want from me? What do you want?
I've just been alone, and you're my daughter, and I love you, and I just needed to see you.
It's bullshit. You want me to take care of you? Yes. Well, I'm not gonna do that. Where the fuck were you when I needed you to take care of me? You know, on all my birthdays, which you never even made one. You probably don't even know what it is. So you know what? No, I don't care if you had a heart attack. Fuck you.
I love that movie so much. I love Darren's work, Mickey's work in that. And yeah, it takes something to tell Mickey Rourke to go fuck off in a scene or in real life. Also,
our first meeting. Like,
right. So he didn't want to meet you, right? Offset, is that the idea?
So in the zone, that whole film, we really rarely interacted on set. You know, I only really got to know him like after filming, and we became friends. But so that was our first meeting. When I walk out the door, and we do that scene, that was like the first words that we spoke to each other was that. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we really like kept our distance on set. Cause he really wanted to be in the zone, but we did such beautiful work. And, you know, again, like he's just got such an ability to open up and be vulnerable, you know, and also be like the biggest badass ever. And yeah. It's a rare, you know, combination, you know, of vulnerability and strength.
Well, you talk early on about sort of just like when you open yourself up and that's when like the true connection happens. And yeah, this like tough guy, this like consummate tough guy got the best accolades of his career when he just like finally kind of like really let it open.
And, yeah. Yeah.
Show his flaws and show, yeah. You know.
100%. And it was filmed a lot like the filming reminded me of 13 and that, you know, like the cinematographer has the camera on their shoulder and it's just, it's very documentary style and it's very loose and it's like very much about the acting. And Darren was like similar to Catherine in a way in that like he really cares about the actor's experience and their input. And like, he wrote a backstory for the character. And, you know, when I had to like get ready for a big emotional scene, like he would come like sit with me for a moment. Like it's unheard of a director like leaving set to go sit with an actor to like get them into the scene. Like they don't do that, but he did. And it shows that the actors feel comfortable enough and like taken seriously and respected enough to give you everything they got. Cause we're not going to give it up, you know, if someone doesn't appreciate it.
Yeah, no, nor should you.
No.
That's just a small sampling of the amazing work. I do want to mention, not beyond Westworld, I'm very excited. You worked with one of my favorite human beings, Daniel Radcliffe, on a, I know it was a short shoot, but Dan says it's like his favorite movie he's ever done. Weird it's Al.
I agree. We both said, oh no, I messed up. He's like, why? I was like, because I'm only going to want to do comedies now. Because this was so fun. We had so much fun.
And so to contextualize, this is a kind of a biopic, not like a straight ahead thing as you wouldn't expect it to be from Weird Al. I think he co-wrote the script even.
Yeah.
And it's Daniel Radcliffe as Weird Al. And it's our buddy Evan Rachel Wood as Madonna.
As Madonna.
Did you have Madonna in your repertoire prior to this or what?
No, I watched videos for like a month beforehand to try to get, because Madonna's early 80s voice is a little different than Madonna in the later years. Like she, you know, I mean, she's Madonna. She goes through many different like evolutions and changes. So it was a very
Can I get a sneak peek? Is it Madonna. Still in there?
Is it still in there? I don't want to give it away. I want people to see the movie because it's cute. It's good. It's good, but I don't want to give it away. But I remember like the first day when we started, everybody came up to me afterwards and Weird Al came up to me and he was like, oh my God. Your line readings, like you, it sounds like Madonna. I'm like, good. That's the point.
The wardrobe must have been insane. I'm sure the wardrobe was unbelievable. The
wardrobe was amazing. We had so much fun. It was so, and I agree with you, like Daniel Radcliffe is also one of my favorite humans. Like I was always such a fan, but you know, sometimes it's not until you're like really working opposite somebody, we're like, oh, you're the real deal. Like you are legit. You're a great actor and you're going to be around for a while.
And no one has an excuse to be an asshole, by the way, after Daniel Radcliffe's the nicest person to everybody. And he has every right to like not be if you wanted to be, right?
He said hello to my child on set. And I was like, I can't even imagine how many times you've had to do this, you know, like, because I was like, I'm a bad mom if I don't facilitate this meeting. And so can you do me a solid? Like how many times has he had to do that? And he was just so lovely and so sweet. And I think he still genuinely, you know, likes brightening up people's days, even though I'm sure it has to be exhausting.
We don't have time to give this subject matter the kind of time it's worth, but I do want to mention Phoenix Rising was a doc that came earlier this year, which is a profound piece of work. And talk again about opening yourself up. I know that must have been quite the journey for you. Can you just talk as much as you're comfortable with just like where activism is in your life right now, balancing that passion and kind of making some good from the trauma you've gone through in your life?
Yeah. I think, you know, kind of back to how I was raised to view acting, I think sort of transformed and translated into activism later in my life, because it's about truth telling and vulnerability. And those are things you need when you're acting, but you also need them in advocacy work. You know, you need to be able to have the hard, uncomfortable conversations and to be seen in all your imperfect glory, you know? And like, if we're really going to examine the problem, we all have to start getting comfortable with putting everything out on the table, even the stuff that, you know, we may not always be proud of, because we're all human and everybody has those things, some worse than others. But it's about having the hard conversations. And so that experience of, because I am a very private person. I mean, even though like I'm an actor and I'm in the public eye, I really actually try to keep my real life private, but I knew that this was the time to be seen and that I was going to do this and do it once and do it for the right reasons. And my family jumped on board to support me and to tell their truths. And I know it was uncomfortable for everybody to be exposed in that way, but it also brought us closer. I think because it gave us all sort of space and permission to feel all the messy feelings, really process what had happened, you know, because I think there are victims of, you know, domestic violence, but it really affects the entire family and anybody who loves the person going through it. It's traumatic. It's you know, on not just one level, but many levels. And so, yeah, anyway, it was very cathartic and I feel a huge weight off of my back. And proud of what we did, even though, you know, really that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's still so much more and so much more that we couldn't put in the documentary and much more of the story. But this will get people started, you know, and all I really wanted to do was educate people about the cycles and the red flags and use it not just as, you know, a way to expose somebody dangerous, but to educate people, you know, about the bigger picture, so that you can get ahead of this, you know, so we can try to prevent it.
Well, for those that want to learn more, please do look up Phoenix Rising and Evan's amazing work. I mean, you know, I know for a fact you've helped many people by telling your difficult story. And I can only imagine how tough it was and how tough it is day to day, but you're doing a lot of good in the universe. So thank you for that. So circling back, Westworld season 4, that's a hard segue, but here we are. Season 4.
Makes sense.
We got to do it, right? What's up ahead past promoting Westworld? Do you know the next gig? Are you, because I know you wrote a script a little while back. Are you still trying to get something to direct?
I had to put all that on hold to do the Phoenix Act and like my whole life sort of got put on hold, and the Phoenix Act took years of constant work and lobbying. Again, like what you see in the documentary is like this little, this much of what we actually, you know, had to do. And so I think now I definitely want to continue activism, and I'm sure, you know, work in the domestic violence field is always going to be a part of my life, even if it's, you know, I'm just like volunteering at my local shelter. Like I just, you know, it's just something I need to do now. But I definitely, because I was in it for so many years, am taking a little bit of a healing break to just sort of regroup and, you know, regulate my nervous system again, and, you know, so that I can go in for round two. So right now, advocacy is a bit on hold so that I can catch up to, you know, some other aspects of my life, but it will always be there. So yeah, I have Weird Al movie coming out in November, and then I'm still working on music. I've been working on some solo stuff.
Nice.
maybe one of the Haim sisters is involved. I don't know.
You're buddies with them, aren't you? That goes way back, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. High school. So yeah, amazing. We all might be finally making some music together.
Very cool.
Yeah, there's going to be some cool stuff coming out soon.
Excellent. And more reasons to catch up.
Yes. Evan and Zane will start playing live again now that everything's sort of opening back up and everybody's going back out on tour. So yeah.
Love it. All right. Well, let's do something fun and silly with Dan when Weird Al comes out. It's good to see you as always. Congratulations. Season 4 of Westworld, as if you guys didn't know already, on HBO. Check it out. It's, you know, I love big swings, whether it's across the universe or Westworld, heady sci-fi. This one goes for the fences and it usually delivers. It does deliver.
It's a great season, yeah.
It's a good one. Evan, thanks so much for the time. Thanks for joining us on 92NY and happy Sad Confused.
Yeah, good to see you, man.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pushed to do this by Josh.